Hello and welcome to the Stretch Podcast. I am your host, Lebubule. The Stretch Podcast is a space where I share my thoughts on matters of personal transformation, emotional well-being, and spiritual growth. My teachings are largely based on what I've learned over the years, what I've read, what I've observed, and my very own personal experiences. The podcast is also a space where I have conversations with people whose work and life experiences has inspired me and helped me grow tremendously. People who are not only experts in their fields, but have open hearts, generous spirits, and they are teachers in their own rights. People who I call perpetual students of life. Here's another episode of the Stretch Podcast.
Welcome to the Stretch Podcast, a listening experience for self-improvers and stretchers looking to master life.
Hello, hey, dumelang, my friends. It is I, Lebubule, your host, with another episode of the Stretch Podcast. And today, Jehovah, you know when you have been anticipating a conversation with someone? And you're anticipating it and you're imagining it in your head and you can tell more or less where it's going to go. You can tell how exciting it's going to be. You can tell how much you will gel. You just know this thing. And then you get that. And then you get more than that. That is my conversation with Vanessa. You will just hear it. We are in sync. We are flowing. We are goosebumping all over the time. In fact, I'm getting goosebumps now just saying this intro. You are in for a treat. She's a wealth of wisdom, and she will talk about healing and self-love and yoga. Please listen to what she says about yoga. Now, as usual, I will introduce her properly at the second segment of the intro. For now, though, I also want to talk about a legend that has left the airwaves, that has left SABC, Noxolo, Grootboom, Ndinithanda Nonke Makhaya. I didn't watch her last episode. If you're not from South Africa, because I know I'm getting a lot of non-South African listeners, Noxolo Grootboom is an anchor on our local television. And she's been reading the news in Sixhosa. Xhosa is one of our languages, for the past 37 years. And she's been an epitome of excellence. So Noxolo Grootboom just said goodbye. She retired from the news, and the whole country was watching. I didn't actually watch the news that day. I was interestingly recording a podcast with someone who's not in the country, so their time is different from me. So for my evening, it was their morning. So I really couldn't watch the news when she was on air. But I did, as I'm doing this intro now, I was listening to her interview on 702 with Clement Manyathela. I made sure that I don't miss that one because I just wanted to capture the moment. You know, things that we do for the last time. I mean, after such a long service, you want to just hear how the person is feeling. And boy, was I crying with her. I mean, when her mother called, and I think Clement, you know what? I take my hat off to Clement. You are doing the most. You are doing the most. I don't know if you listen to my podcast, but yeah, Clement is doing a brilliant job on that slot there. You know, that big slot that he's occupying. I mean, after Reedy, after Eusebius, yeah, no, he's doing the most. So Clement, if you listen to the podcast, my brother, yeah, we take our hat off to you. So Clement interviewed her, and, you know, we were crying. She was crying. And I just want to reflect on how excellent she is. One of the callers who happened to be a former colleague spoke of how Noxolo, after years and years, she would always rehearse. She would read the script over and over as if she doesn't know Xhosa, or as if she is not sure if she's how she's going to come across. She says every time they would go on a break, remember the news are live. It's not like me now that I'm recording. And if I don't like what I'm recording, I can just cut it out and record again. And I do that a lot. And as much as my intros sound like I'm just, you know, coming in and talking, I sometimes do 10 takes because it has to sound right. The energy has to be right. It can't be too long. It can't be too short. We plan and practice for this work, guys. But anyway, back to Noxolo. Apparently, when they go on a commercial break on an advert, Noxolo would not be on Twitter, should not be responding to your WhatsApp, because sometimes you do that, and nothing wrong with that. But she would then go over the next line and the next line and the next line. And when they're back, cameras, lights, action, she's on those news. And it reminded me also of John Robbie, you know, John Robbie of 702. Also, after 30 years of doing the John Robbie show, apparently the same was said about him by one of his colleagues, that John Robbie would be there without fail every morning at 2 a.m. His show started at 6 to 9, 6 a.m. to 9. But at 2 a.m. or 2:30, he was there at 702 Studios. He had pen and paper. He had notes. He had plans every day, so that when it is time for the show, he is sailing through. So I'm saying this to say that things that generally look effortless. And I posted about this, I think, a few weeks ago on my Instagram and my Lebopule's Work page, the Facebook one, that very often we think what looks effortless is because, you know, it's effortless. And it's actually a paradox. Anything that looks effortless, if for you listening to me on the podcast every Sunday or every Tuesday or whenever, and you just feel like, ah, Lebo is a natural, oh, child. You don't know what happens behind the scenes. You don't know what it takes for me to eventually have a conversation with someone. There is a ton of work behind you downloading this episode and listening to me and Vanessa. It took a lot of effort, and not just preparing the show notes. I mean, not just preparing the intros. Getting hold of the person, because it starts there. It starts in the mind that I want to bring about a particular message. Then you have to look for the people, and then you have to approach them. And sometimes you have to approach them cold, like Vanessa was another cold call, and wait for their response and not push and not harass. Meanwhile, every Sunday, I have promised you what? An episode. And I have promised you an episode with a guest, because we are in the guesting season. So Noxolo Grootboom for me is an epitome of excellence, and it takes a lot of work for us to do the work that we do. Interestingly, one of the conversations I had with a podcast guest, you're going to listen to him towards the end of the month, we are talking about that. We are talking about work, the work that you don't see, the work that you are reaping the fruits of, you know, because listening to the podcast, you are enjoying a fruit of my labor, and sometimes you don't know how much this is costing me in whatever cost I am paying, which includes money. It does, let's face it. Tsepo is not editing for free, so yeah, you're gonna enjoy that episode as well. But without talking too much, let us listen to a voice note. We have a voice note today from Damaris. And then we'll play a promo, my coaching promo. And then I will introduce you to Vanessa after the break.
Personal growth coaching or life coaching has become an accepted alternative for anyone seeking guidance in order to overcome obstacles, difficulties, and healing caused by past traumas. It is also the most effective tool to use when you want to achieve desired goals, regain confidence, self-love, self-esteem, and self-worth in order to be the best version of yourself. Lebopule, a natural teacher, has been coaching for over 8 years. Using ancient wisdom and knowledge, she's able to gently and firmly guide or coach you through whatever struggle you are faced with. Her natural talent to connect deeply and teach others has seen her helping many over the years. Book your first coaching conversation with her now at bookings@lebopule.co.za.
All right, let me introduce you to Vanessa Tseki, aka Organic Nomad on Instagram, aka founder or co-founder of The Nest. Do you know The Nest? The famous Nest where they do yoga and plant-based foods. Do you know that? You must know that. AKA host of the Moon Gatherings on Instagram. Are you with me, somebody? Do you see who I'm talking about here? So Vanessa is another one that I found. I didn't know her personally, but I knew of her. You know, her reputation preceded her. I knew of her because I knew of The Nest, and I knew of The Nest around 2018. And I was actually so pissed off when I found out about The Nest in 2018 because I had moved to the Bundus. I had decided to move to the Central Karoo, and I just, if I was in Joburg, it was obviously going to be my yoga center. So The Nest, in case you don't know it, it is a yoga center out in, actually, I didn't even ask it, but I think it's in Greenside, those areas. Those areas in Jevele of people like her. But she does speak about The Nest and their offering in the conversation, so don't worry. So I followed her as usual. I mean, I follow The Nest space on Instagram. Then I follow her and Anesu, her partner, because they co-founded The Nest, and she does talk about that in the conversation. And if I say to you, this conversation was so spirited. It was almost like there is a third thing around us. The energy was just so palpable. Like I was saying to you in the first intro, that I had goosebumps the entire time I was speaking to her. It was true, mainly because of the synergy between us, the similarities. I mean, there's a part where it will floor you, where both of us woke up that morning and we decided we are going to do a particular Kundalini yoga kriya, or it's a practice you will hear in the conversation. And it's a very, very intriguing conversation. We cover healing, we cover what self-love is, and we cover the yoga, what yoga really does, why yoga is such a healing and self-loving practice. And we delve a little bit deeper in Kundalini yoga in particular, because Kundalini yoga is the one that she teaches, and Kundalini yoga is the only yoga, or rather the yoga that really just got me practicing for real. Because before Kundalini yoga, I was dabbling in yoga like everybody else. When you are still trying to find what this thing is, I knew it has spiritual connotations. I knew the healing and deep spiritual thing around yoga, but it took Kundalini yoga to get me to fully understand what's that about. And like I said to Fidoz, when I was talking to her back in episode 100 and something, you can scroll down, but the title was The History of Yoga. Back then, I asked Fidoz, what is it about Black women and Kundalini? And in fact, it was her who asked me that, what is it about Black women and Kundalini? And I remember just answering from spirit that I think we know it. I think Kundalini yoga is really, really has its origins in Africa. And I say this because in the conversation with Vanessa, I do say to her that I don't find it difficult to remember the kriya names, the mantras, the actual exercises. I call them exercises. They are asanas. For lack of a better word, I never forget it. Like, for an example, I would learn a kriya and maybe I would learn it once. And then the next time I don't need the video. I just remember the moves. I know what follows, what mantra follows this, what breath work follows this, when to inhale, when to exhale with this one. And for me, Kundalini connected me deeply to who I am, and she touches on that because she's the teacher of Kundalini. What else do we touch on? Sadly, we don't touch on plant-based eating, and I'm like, why? Why couldn't we? Because I am sort of on that path. If you are following the podcast, you know I am very much in plant-based, although I still eat the chicken and the fish, but I am completely off red meat. We close off with, we don't close off with the moon, but the last topic we touch on is the moon. Oh my God, and she unpacks it so beautifully. And she unpacks why they do moon gatherings on Instagram. She unpacks the difference between the new moon and the full moon. And we close off with what they do at the nest. You are in for like a serious treat. But because I don't know Vanessa personally, I'm going to do what I normally do with every guest that I don't know personally. I'm going to read a little bit of her bio, but you can see it there on the show notes, right? You can see it there. It is a bit long, so I'm just going to select some stuff, but everything is on the show notes, including her contact details. Her email is there, her IG handle is there, and her Twitter handle is there, and also they are actually at Greenside. I knew that. 14 Greenside in Gauteng. Okay, I am reading her bio now. Okay, I'm gonna start here. Vanessa Tseki is from Organic Nomad, a yoga and wellness company under the Be Creative Group. Organic Nomad is an African millennial spiritual journey that manifests in yoga, plant-based living, and travel. She is one of the co-owners of a 100% black and female-owned Nest Space Yoga Studio in Johannesburg. Services and work in the wellness space that Vanessa has done is, one of them is she's a founding board of the Kundalini Africa Rising. Kundalini Africa Rising is an umbrella initiative for various Kundalini yoga classes and yoga teachers training incubator projects. You see what I was meaning about the whole Kundalini thing? It is very African for me, honestly, and it's an instinct. It's an instinctive download that I got, that lento le eyenu le. Okay, and qualifications and healing modalities. Okay, I'm going to sound this out because I don't know if it's a word or... Okay, AKYTSSA Level 1 certificate in 2016. And it took 3 years. Level 2 certificate in progress, duration 5 years. You see what I'm talking about. This person is learned. Teacher trainer certificate in progress, 8 years. Satnam, oh my God, Satnam. Oh, you know what, Vanessa, you're gonna have to come back so that we can talk about the Sat Kriyas and Satnam and the mantras, what they all mean. Okay, so Satnam Kiddies Yoga Certificate. Collaborators and partners, she has collaborated with, I don't know if it's her personally or it's the Nest Space, but it doesn't matter. Nike South Africa, is it Tunche Summit Fix? Oh, why can't I read today? The Pack Running Club, Batu Billy Nelson, Makomo Gallery. Okay, so that is Vanessa trying to really just read her bio there. And I hope I didn't butcher it too much. But it is there on the show notes. And I did tell you what we covered. Without much ado, let me give you Vanessa Tseki.
Welcome to the Stretch Podcast.
Vanessa, oh my God, oh my God. I have never, ever been so excited in my life to have a conversation with someone like you. I am so happy you agreed. Yeah, I'm so happy you agreed to join me because I have been following you. I have been stalking you. I think you are doing some of the most incredible work. I remember when I found out about the Nest, like some years back, but my 2-3 years back, and mm-hmm. when I discovered that it is owned by 2 young black women, I'm like, what? I need to meet these people. And here we are today. Welcome to the Stretch Podcast. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much, Lebo, for having me. And I'm super excited and matching your energy on being here as well, because I've also been following the work you've been doing and it's been incredible.
Yeah, thank you, man. So I normally just like to start with asking my guest about how the year 2021 is, for obvious reasons. I mean, we come from a year unlike any other. How are you finding this year? How did it start and how are you now?
I think it definitely started with a lot of the same. I mean, for me, when the clock struck 12 for 2021, I think the general consensus was there wasn't much of a difference from 2020. Yeah. It just felt like the year had just sort of overlapped. But slowly, I mean, I went through Aquarius season in February, which I was initially so excited about.
I remember you were excited because I was following your post. You were so excited about Aquarius. And then, boom.
Showed me my life. But it was good. It was the kind where, you know, Aquarius at the end of the day doesn't play around, you know, and it's not all rainbows and sunshine. It's really about just getting down and doing what needs to be done and being a warrior, whether it be a warrior for social justice, a spiritual warrior, a love warrior, but you gotta have something you stand for. And if you don't, you're gonna crumble. And yeah. So I had a lot of, I felt that shift in energy. And then slowly and gently, I've started to settle in as Pisces season came in. That was so gentle. And and now I think I'm finally getting into the year. 2020 really threw me off balance completely. I think, I mean, everyone sort of can attribute to that, but I sort of lost in a spiritual way. I wasn't as deep in my practices. And so slowly coming back, and because I felt like I lost myself a bit, and coming back to me, is this another journey that, you know, you're kind of tired of, but, you know, this coming back and rediscovering and self-love, but it's still necessary.
It's so funny how we had the opposite experience, because I'm Aquarius like you, and I found the Aquarius age and time and the moon and the new moon in Aquarius, it was the most gentlest ever, and I felt in power, in my worth, and in my building. But I like what you said, because you're saying Aquarius wants you to be for something. I think I had finally, this year is the year that I'm now finally building my way. I've been doing the foundation the past few years. So what killed me was Pisces. Ooh, Pisces perform, and I was crawling on the floor. And now in Aries, I have the fire and the drive. Absolutely. I'm actually very energized. I'm loving the Aries.
Too.
Vibe. And also, we've just come from a Libra full moon. How is that feeling for you?
It was really good. I mean, I that was a very chaotic time for me. I've manifested a lot of work and a lot of opportunities. So it's all coming all at once. And yeah. I'm just trying to now just like have the capacity to fulfill. And the Libra full moon made it possible. Like there was a bit of balance in everything I did. Even in the chaos, there was that level of just, you know, take it easy, show up the best way you can, but just make sure you're showing up. So I really did enjoy that, the full moon. Yeah. It was
same,
lovely.
Same. I think it's the same. I took decisions that would normally freak me out. Decisions that are really playing on my root chakra story. And sacral chakra, you know, my survival issues, money dynamics. Absolutely. But I took a decision to say, I'm leaving this, whether or not it's bringing money, it's not working, bye.
Yeah.
And I felt very light. Anyway, yes, you see, you and I, we vibe so, and I knew the conversation was
going. I want to ask you questions now.
That is so funny. Okay, hold it back. We will get into it. So let's start, Rene. Why you are here, apart from the fact that I really absolutely loved you and love you very much, is that I find that you do a lot of self-love and a lot of healing based on your post, of course, very, very well. And for me, you do the self-love that I like, because I've never seen Ntutsa Snacks, you know, without talking bad things. But what does self-love mean? Hey, how many self-love is a magazine? Come on.
That's true.
So what does self-love mean to you, and why does it always have to go hand in hand with healing?
That's I feel like that's an ever evolving answer. You know, what I'm going to answer today is different from what I answered last year and what I'm going to answer, because it's a journey. And self-love for me is literally being able to first identify and recognize yourself and your true self. So it's a really internal process. And why it goes hand in healing, because healing is a tool that allows you to go internally. And once you go internally, you've got to love, you got to have to start loving what you find. And that's really tough. You know, everyone thinks it's just going internal and then that's it. But no, once you're there, you're both confronted with your beautiful light, but also your darkness. And it's being able to see the polarities and the gray in between and be like, you know what? Let me show myself unconditional love. I'm not a perfect person. I am a river of contradictions, but in all of that entirety, I'm accepting myself and I'm doing what I need to do to better myself. And that's what I define self-love is, you know, loving the inside, not just the outside. And the healing tool is what allows you, the tool that allows you to go inside.
Yeah, you can't do it without doing the other way. And this is so fascinating to me because that's what I teach. I'm not sure if you know, I do have an online school, and this month, which is March, we are doing shadow work, and we're doing both the dark and the light shadow and turning it into amazing. The golden shadow. Yeah. And so I love that you are saying when you go within, you absolutely have to embrace your dark. You really have to embrace the fact that, Mara, sometimes he's selfish, like seriously.
You are clever.
And
it's greedy. And I've been hurt and I'm broken, you know? Yeah, I'm also broken and have gone through traumas. Like, to get to our age and be scot-free would be quite rare.
What is our age? You look very young. You look like you're in your 30s. Now I'm old. Don't let my pretty face fool you. I'm 40-something.
Well, when her age is just a construct, right? It's in Tulip. It's a construct. I'm talking about our wisdom.
Yes, true. Okay, so how did you come to the space of self-love? I seem to know that you have an interesting background, which has nothing to do with the nest, has nothing to do with yoga and healing. How did the journey towards the Vanessa that we know now come about?
So that it's a long and twisted journey with ups and downs, but in a nutshell, I first came to understanding or having an interest in wellness and self-love and self-healing when I was sick, and I was diagnosed when I was about 15 with mild bipolar. And this was just, it manifested in the forms of, you know, having like highs emotionally and psychologically, and also having lows that are similar to depressive episodes. So it's a manic high and a depressive low. Not to be confused with the bipolar that most people know, which is a bit more extreme and, you know, requires a bit more observation and support, as much as bipolar 2 does require that, it's a lot more manageable. And I realized my parents, obviously being quite worried, sent me to various doctors and clinics and like rehab centers in the sense of wellness. And I was put on medication, antidepressants, things that to balance that medication, you know, a whole cocktail. And the feeling that I was getting was not of healing, but of management, you know, like I wasn't getting high highs and low lows, but on the medication I was getting absolutely nothing. I was just numb. And so that started my journey of wanting to just find alternative ways of healing and managing my condition. And it's when, you know, Oprah came through with her, you know, similar to what you're doing, you know, finding, talking to people that she felt were inspiring and could contribute. And she had an interview with Eckhart Tolle on A New Earth, his book. And I was fascinated by that talk because there was something about what he was saying that resonated so deeply with me in terms of the mind, because essentially my condition is all revolves around my inability to control my mind. And finding out that there was a natural way that you could was absolutely a game changer. So I read the book and it gave me this incredible theory of being in the present moment and using the breath to anchor you in the present moment, and how this then has a ripple effect in your life. But it was a theory, it was a book, and I'd read it and I intellectualized it and understood it, but I needed a practice to follow that. And that began my journey where I was then open to stuff such as yoga. And I found an organization called The Art of Living, led by Shri Shri Ravi Shankar. and learned an incredible breathing technique called the Sudassian Kriya. And that was the first time I could tangibly had a tool that I could use in order to still my mind and feel immediate effects. And then that rippled into, you know, Vipassana and going into meditation.
Wow, you did Vipassana, Kitaba. But anyway, continue.
We need to get to that. I Vipassana is literally everything to me. It is everything to me. But and then that's when I began that internal journey and realized it was more than just the bipolar. There was so much more that I needed to be aware of to begin with. And as going back to your first question, and start healing and loving what I found, because immediately I hated what I found, you know. It got me angry. I felt, I felt resentful. But slowly the practice allows you to sort of tap into that neutral mind or form of equanimity where you just observe yourself, you know, and accept that, you know what, this is how I came about. I can't change the past. I have no control of the future. But in the present moment, what I am going to do is start loving and healing myself. And then that led to my journey, which of course comes in different forms. You know, it's not just you wake up one day and you're like, okay, we're self-healing. Yeah. You know, it was all of that. And so that's sort of how I got into the path, if I answered your question.
No, you have. You actually gave me more than I expected, because these journeys of how we find ourselves doing the work that we're doing are just so fascinating. Absolutely. Mine is the classical one. Mine is two ways. First, it was a whisper. I'm so happy, by the way, that you compared me to Oprah. I receive. The first one for me, just sort of, you know, I'm also sharing because you wanted to ask questions, was when I turned 22 and I was pregnant. I'm 22, I'm pregnant with my second child, mind you, and I'm married and I'm working in corporate and I hate everything about my life. And I suppose I didn't listen too well, but then I started reading a lot of books, including Eckhart Tolle, The Road Less Traveled was the first book I read, which led me to Louis Hayes, Wayne Dyer's, Yanla, that whole crew, and obviously Oprah is one of them. But what got me to do the healing and teaching work was when I went bankrupt at 30, 31. I lost everything I ever had. So my collapse was financial. And with other people, it's illness like you. With other people, it's a divorce and all that. So it's very fascinating how we come to the work through pain. I just wish that the Aquarius age can take us to a level where we come to the work through joy, because apparently that's happening in other senses. Okay, so, and then you started The Nest. How long ago was that? And what do you do at The Nest? Because I want us to get into yoga as a healing practice.
Absolutely. So, yes. So I then got introduced to my business partner, Anesu, in 2018.
Sorry to cut you. Anesu is the second Anesu that I know. The first Anesu I know is my sister's son. And I thought it was the only person with that name. Does she have Zimbabwean origins? Because
she's Zimbabwean. Yeah, she's very Zimbabwean. Okay. She's Shona.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Because my sister married a Shona guy. So, okay. So I thought Anesu was like, because I was like, Anesu, but she's a woman? Because my Anesu is a little boy.
That's so beautiful. Yes, so I met Anesu in 2018. And at the time she was starting, she had left her corporate, from medicine to corporate, and very similar to your path, was just over it and was ready to start on this wellness journey. I already had a studio in Linden at the time, but it was just this place I was renting out, you know, where I was just teaching my classes and hosting stuff. And we were introduced by friends, and she was starting The Nest space. And, you know, first she contacted me as a teacher, and I was like, sure. But at the time, I'm an entrepreneur and very busy with so many things. So at the time, I was like, sure, I'm about to go in an incubation, a leadership incubation right now for 3 months. But, you know, I'd give me a shout. I can probably assist as well. My background is in branding and communications. So this seems like a beautiful thing that I'd love to be a part of. So let's chat when I get back. So I went on my incubation and we're still chatting. And she set up she got the space, she set it up and everything. And then, you know, I was just waiting for things to happen, you know. The people, she didn't know how to get people to walk in the doors though and get to know about it. And so when we met up, it became very clear that the partnership that was required from us really had to be a 50-50 partnership. I was more interested in her hiring me and paying me for my branding situation. But she didn't have the money. Obviously, she didn't have the budget for that. She had just opened the studio. And so she then, obviously, the payment was then we would go 50-50 as partners and it would become mine just as much as hers. And I was reluctant in the beginning because I was like, ooh, I've got so many things going on. You know, me opening a studio was something that I thought a little further down the line. Sure. But it just, but it also felt really right. And we connected and resonated and had such great synergy that there was just no way I could have.
No, you guys have such incredible synergy. I watch you when you do the moon gatherings, which we're going to talk about towards the end. And I'm thinking these people, you look like you love each other. It works. The whole combination works. You are so lucky.
Definitely.
You guys are really blessed.
We know we're so grateful and are definitely aware of that and know how rare that is. That's exactly the reason that then I didn't really have a choice in that matter. And so my job came on to be like, okay, she set it up. It's beautiful. It's exactly everything that I would have done if I'd set it up. So I was like, that's the hard work done. And also it's nice because the parts that she likes, I don't like. The parts that I like, she doesn't like. So I don't like putting drills and getting palettes and, you know, sourcing. She did all of that painting, you know. Wow, but what I do, you know, is I network, I make noise. Yeah, and she just came on Twitter, you know, so she's not really about that. So we started and I made the loudest noise I've ever made of anything, but also because it resonated so deeply.
Yes.
And it came from a place of a calling as opposed to me just saying, oh, Kopalitron support, you know, got business. It was like, guys, here is something that there's an offering, a service that we've got. And that's how the Nest came to being, and the reception was phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal, and just reaffirmed that we were on the right path, and this was something that our community desperately needed and appreciated.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it is well branded. It is beautiful. I mean, it just looks like the Nest, and I love the word because it actually does that for us. It is that Nest that everyone needs. And I was so sad because when the Nest became the Nest, I had moved from Johannesburg to the Central Karoo. I moved from the city to a very small town in the Central Karoo. Deep spiritual reasons.
I know, it sounds good though. For me, leaving Johannesburg sounds like a blessing.
It is. When it is so good that every time I go to Joburg, I really have to do a lot of mantras and do the sat kriyas and ground. Absolutely. Because the energy in Joburg, people are, you guys are in trouble. And you feel it better when you are out of it.
Even when I'm here, I feel like I'm in a pressure cooker or in a situation. It feels like, you know, you compromise a lot being in Joburg on your spiritual journey.
No, spirit doesn't like it. Also, if you think about how Joburg came about, you know, the digging of the gold, they really really destroying Mother Earth and on the backs of black men. It's a bad space energetically. You know, so it doesn't really work for spiritual people, but you make it work. Hey, you make it happen.
You do. In fact, those are the places that need the light bearers the most, you know. We can't all abandon
that's
it.
True. Yeah, that's true. I never saw it that way. Actually, that's very true. Maybe that's why I also, because a lot of my work is done in Joburg when I really have to see my people, when I need to have my workshops and my retreats.
Yes.
I must be in Johannesburg and bring the light. Yes. But yes, that's absolutely. When I come back, I am flat for a week. Okay, let's get into yoga. That is also another beautiful journey. So a lot of people who enter yoga speak of how transformative and how they develop and they grow spiritually to really love and heal themselves. And I know it's not all yogas. So if you don't mind, because I know yoga is a big topic on its own, what is it about yoga that is so, so healing, especially to us women? And then we'll talk about Kundalini in particular, because that's the yoga I practice.
Amazing. I'm so happy that that's the yoga you practice. Like, we're like one in the same for sure. Like, so I think just in general, as a broad umbrella, yoga is just so transformational, because for a lot of us, it is yoga that allows us to really connect to our body. And not just in the sense where you notice, oh, I've gained weight, or I've lost weight, or my arm hurts, or etc., but it's that internal journey that I've just kept emphasizing throughout our conversation. Because finally, with yoga, it's not a sport. You're not competing with anybody. It's not anything that you're doing for anyone other than yourself. And throughout the practice, you're encouraged to have your eyes closed and to focus on your breath. And this is a few times and the very few practices that require absolute stillness, and where the breath is able to lead you into different postures, and you suddenly get reintroduced to your body, to yourself, and you're suddenly like, oh, hello, I didn't know I couldn't do this, or I didn't know I could do this, or I didn't know I struggled with this. And you start being like, oh, wow, it's like staring at your hand for the first time and realizing that, oh, I put a mole here, my finger's a little bent here, oh, my this and that. You start to really get to know your body, and that in turn requires you to then really still the mind, because you get really focused. You get into the asanas, irrespective, you need to focus or you will lose balance. You will fall out of that tree pose. You'll lose that rhythm in the chant. And that internal journey is the transformation, and that is the healing process. And that's where it begins. And that's why yoga is so healing in that sense, because it is that tool, similar to the Sudarshan Kriya, the breathing technique I learned, similar to Vipassana. Yoga in of itself is a tool that allows you to, it's sort of that unlocks that sort of paradigm, or, you know, way on which you can really see that there's a whole universe that exists inside of you.
I love that, because how I got to yoga, again, around that time that I was 22, 23, I was a gym bunny. I mean, after I had my baby, I used to love to go to gym. I used to enjoy spinning and aerobics and all that.
Me too.
And I remember one time, I love spinning. It's the thing I do. I hate running. I
Me too. Spinning.
So one day I was late for the spinning class, which hardly happens because I'm very punctual. And then I saw these women getting, you know, yoga mats and all that, getting into this aerobic class. So I look at my time, and I'm quite structured in my ways. I have my Mars is in Capricorn. My work ethic is in Capricorn. So
me too. Me too. No. My moon is in
Sag, though. Sagittarius.
My rising is Sag.
My rising is Leo.
Interesting.
Very interesting. My rising is Leo. Anyway, the listeners will have to get on with it. I'll explain to them what we covered. But I was late for the spinning class, and I just saw these women, and I'm like, I can't not gym, so let me do this thing. And I remember after doing the poses, what I now know as the bow pose, as a heart opening chakra.
Yes,
I remember just boo-hoo-hooing in the bathroom, crying my eyes out. And then I thought, Suga, I'm not going to do these things anymore. And I took it as if maybe my body's responding to the fact that I was the only Black woman there and the instructor didn't naga me. I just thought it was race relations. Later on, I don't know if you know a woman called Vangile Magwagwa.
The financial spiritual whiz.
She's one of my friends. So Vangile, in 2018, we went on a retreat, her retreat in Thailand, and she's also a yoga instructor, but she does, what do they call it? A different yoga, wow, geez, Vangile, please, if you're listening to this, forgive me. I forgot the type of yoga that she was doing. And I liked it because it's very feminine. It's restorative in its nature. And then when I came back, I said to myself, I'm going to actually commit to doing yoga. And, you know, we all start on YouTube. I live in Central Karoo. There are no yoga centers. And then I connected so deeply with Kundalini yoga. Vanessa, when I say I connected deeply, I mean I don't forget their mantras. It's almost like I know it. It's almost like it is reminding me of my past life. I kid you not. And I know I can say this to you because you can take
Absolutely. No, that's resonating.
I recognize it as something that I practiced some time back in my past life. So I want us to talk about Kundalini Yoga and what is it about Kundalini Yoga and Black women in particular?
Okay, definitely. So I resonate with everything. I mean, we knew this was going to happen before that we basically are the same person. But yeah. Yes, with the Kundalini Yoga, and just let me know if there's the background noise is, if there's any background noise.
No, it's actually quite clear. Even if there is, Tsepo will edit it out. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Tsepo. Great. So Kundalini Yoga is, for me, one of the most powerful yogas I have ever, and I have done a lot of different types of yoga, from vinyasa to hatha to hot yoga to all of that. And when I came in contact with Kundalini Yoga, it for me as well just rocked me. And let's just get into what Kundalini Yoga is.
Yes, please. Yeah.
So with Kundalini Yoga, it, in terms of asanas and body postures and movement, it encompasses all the other yogas, from Ashtanga to Vinyasa to Hatha. You won't find movement in any other yoga that does not exist in Kundalini Yoga. And then you add, Kundalini is yoga class. So yes. Then you add the spiritual conscious element to it. And it's a really a yoga of awareness, because that's honestly what you're doing, is becoming more and more aware of subtle energy bodies that exist within you. It is of the belief that at our root chakra, there lies untapped energy that is coiled similar to a snake. And that's where the snake analogy comes through. Not from any, snakes are demonized in Christianity and religion.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with either a snake or what it represents in other forms of religion. The reason we have that serpent energy is because of the coil that the energy does. So it resembles any, if you're going to find a creature, it'd be like a snake or a worm, but more a snake because of power, because the snake uncoils and then there's power behind it.
Yes.
And it's at your root chakra. And through the body postures, through the breathing, through the meditation, through the chanting that all exists within Kundalini Yoga, actually a prerequisite of Kundalini Yoga, we are raising that energy to uncoil itself up along our chakra system. And chakras are those energy centers. And as it uncoils our chakra systems, it activates them all the way to our crown chakra, where then we can then expect what is known as a Kundalini awakening. And it is awakening that is similar to most spiritual awakenings. And that is when you suddenly become aware of the reality as it is, not as you want it to be, not as it's been taught to you, but the reality as it is. And that's why it can be quite dangerous without the supervision of, a qualified teacher or support, because sometimes that information comes too quick, too fast. And if you don't do it properly, like, for example, you mix your practice well with weed or psychedelics or psychoactive medicine, they can actually become an overload. And that's why people sometimes, there's this rumor that Kundalini Yoga is dangerous. Yes, if you mix it with stuff. Yes, if you do it improperly, you can have that energy becomes almost like when you, similar to when you, a charge, electronic charge. When it gets too much, it can blow your fridge, it can blow your laptop, it can blow, and it'll blow your mind if you don't do it properly and have it completely distributed. So that's what it is. And it's extremely important, because that awareness, that entire process is extremely healing. And that is, and it's extremely powerful, not just the practice, but the power that you tap into is your own power. And as Black women, we need to tap into our own power, because we are the group that our power has been taken from the most. We have been stripped of our power, or at least attempted to have been stripped of our power. And Kundalini allows us to connect back to it, so we can do the work that they so fear that we are going to do.
Can I take a breath? Or must we do the breath of fire rather?
breath of fire. No. Hate me for breath of fire. Oh, they hate me for that, hey?
Oh, yeah, I know. I actually have come to enjoy it, and I know when to use it. There's poses that I use. Like for today, for an example, I did the Nabi Kriya.
Oh my gosh!
Oh, please don't say you did the Nabi Kriya this morning, because this is too freaky now.
I literally just started my 40 days, and it's the Nabi Kriya.
It is tough, but it is extremely transformational. So I
are you the doing Nabi Kriya for Apana? Because the Nabi Kriya I'm doing doesn't have breath of fire though.
No, it doesn't have breath of fire at all. It's
a leg lift.
It's leg lifts, everything that's on the so floor, crazy. Except for when you stand up at the end to integrate everything. Yeah,
that is it. So crazy that we're both doing that. That is literally so crazy.
But it's very goosebumps crazy.
Your listeners need to understand that there are over 5,000 Kriyas in Kundalini yoga, and for us out of 5,000 plus to have chosen the same one to do this morning is crazy.
The goosebumps I had, I've had goosebumps since I was talking to you on Instagram. Every time I come to your DMs, I get goosebumps, and for me it's a sign. Your body talks. There's body signs that I know that okay, this person, something is happening between me and her. We will find out. So thank you for that.
All of this.
Yeah. And nice and easy also. And I love that we are not forceful. I hope I was never forceful with you.
Never. You are the most gentle. Yo, my God. This is why this was a podcast. I knew I had to. Because I have people who like send me question marks. What happened? When are you getting it? You are always just so gentle. It was if you knew me, you were like, I can see it's hectic. And I was just like, this is the one that I really want to do.
Yeah, I know. When your heart is ready, you'll come through. Absolutely. And when your heart was ready, you came through. Okay, thank you so much for that information, and I'm so happy that I got someone like you to just unpack Kundalini, because I have my most following on Facebook. I'm trying to integrate it more in is it YouTube?
No, I'm on Facebook. I've just got my biggest following is on Facebook.
Yeah, me too. Interesting. I'm just trying to really work Instagram more, because I find that strangely, while I have smaller followers on Instagram, they actually buy my stuff. They buy
that's the thing.
It's interesting that's I suppose it's a vibe thing. But anyway, I do try to talk about these things on my page and on my Facebook page. But I just find a lot of people are terrified. So I'm going to push this podcast more than any other, because it's important information. Beautiful. Now, let's get into the next thing, or maybe let's talk a little bit about Vipassana, and let me tell you why. Yes, Vipassana does not call my name, and I remember Vangile saying to me that Vipassana is like that. If it doesn't resonate, don't even go, Lebs. You will find something, because I do meditation, I do mindfulness, but I have never, and like it's stirring. I mean, I do things. But Vipassana just never, something says no, something deep within me. I remember also just praying about it, that, I'm going through something, I want stillness, I'm desperate. Because, we get to that point where we're desperate for silence.
Absolutely.
And should I do Vipassana? And I just got a nice no. I even dreamt of my mom. My mom passed on in 2017, saying, I will write to my war, right? For me, it was a message that don't do Vipassana. What does Vipassana do for you? And a lot of my students go, they go and like, Auslep, we didn't tell you because we thought you were going to say no. And I'm like, no, I'll never say no. What does Vipassana do for you? And do you go often, or did you do it once? And if you could tell the listeners what it is.
So definitely. So I just want to I disagree with this, respectfully disagree with Vangile on the calling thing, because Vipassana, I don't believe it calls anybody. I think the people who claim the calling is because people are telling them. It never resonates, because it is not like that. And you will see when you experience it, it's not charismatic. It's not magnetic. It's got none of the showy of, all these other practices. Like Kundalini is very charismatic. Like your Kundalini yogi comes in and you're like, hello. You're already revering him. Vipassana has got none of that. And you'll understand that, I think on a very deep level, as when you were doing Kundalini, when you first, there were things that were resonating. Your soul already has lived a couple of times and knows exactly what Vipassana is. So when it knows it is there, because Vipassana does it really the rug from right under you. It really does, and unceremoniously so. When I talk about dealing with your darkness, yes, that is a place you have to lose your mind in order to find it there. You lose your mind, you lose yourself in those 10 days, but it's contained and it's so structured that it's responsible. So you won't lose yourself in that sense. You will always come back. And that is it is a crazy process. And I think on a deep level, the idea of sitting with yourself, there's going to be some, because it's like ayahuasca. There's just some things you might not be ready for. you know, and ready to engage with. And when you're there, there's no, it's all or nothing. So to get into Vipassana, I'm actually a very, 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 very devout Vipassana meditator. I've been doing it since 2020. I am now about to do my 20-day silent retreat for the second time. And in order to do your 20-day, you have to have at least completed 10 days. So I've already completed those.
But then you didn't start in 2020.
No, I started in 2010.
Yeah, because you said 2020. How are you good?
No, sorry.
2010.
Sorry, started in 2010.
2010.
So.
Yeah, no. Yeah, yes, that's a long time. That's when. Yes. Yeah, that's a long time.
Okay. Exactly. And when I went, I literally went. It was similar to me going skydiving. It was just a bucket list. I was like, silence in 10 days. Yes, you know, and sort of went there. And I don't even remember it. I know. And I remember afterwards going straight to the bar and getting a beer because I was like, Khilik, that was a lot. And not going back for another 2 years. But the seed had been planted. Yeah, the seed had been planted and I could not run away. So basically, Vipassana is a meditation technique that derives from the Buddha.
Yeah.
It is not a Buddhist. It's non-circular. But it does. It's one of his teachings. And it's basically also a meditation of awareness, an awareness of your sensations and of your breath. And it is a tool that you go so deep in. They liken it to surgery, like going and open and they cus you up. And then pus comes out, lots and lots and lots of pus. And then they clean it and you keep cleaning the pus away and cleaning until the pus is done. Then you put in that little ointment and then you have to stitch yourself up and put a balm and wrap yourself up and you leave the Vipassana wrapped up like that. That is why it is not a sexy meditation.
You know, I'm listening and my heart is pounding. I'm even thinking, I wonder if you can hear my heart because... That's what I'm scared of. I think I'm scared. I think I'm terrified. I'll pray about it some more. When I'm ready, I'll go. Yeah. So you're about to do the 20. Yeah.
I think that's what Vangile was saying. Sorry.
Yeah, I think that's what Vangile was trying to say, that just wait until you are ready. More than anything.
Goodness. Absolutely.
Okay, last topic before we wrap it up. The moon. Okay, so again, a story. In 2014, I found myself every time I can't sleep, like there would be nights where I'm just unable to sleep and I wouldn't understand why. Mm. And one night I woke up, let me go make chamomile. And when I looked up, there was this bright, most beautiful, like gigantic moon through the window. Mm. I was still in Alex living with my mom because I stayed with my mom for a while before I moved here because she wasn't well.
Okay.
And I just stared at this moon and nothing clicked. Second month, same thing happens. I can't sleep. I'm tossing and tossing. I wake up. You just see this bright light and holy hell, it's a full moon. And I think by the third time, I noticed where I am and there's a link. And I wrote about it on Facebook because I talk a lot on Facebook, or I used to. But, you know, every time I can't sleep, there's a full moon. And the research began. I started reading up and now I am known as a moony, moonologist. Yeah. What is it about?
Moonologist.
you know what you do with Anesu, every new moon you have a gathering, every full moon you have a gathering. I don't have a gathering, but every new moon and full moon, I write a post for my followers just so that they understand what this moon comes with or this new moon comes with. It's a ritual that I do from my heart to theirs. What is it about the moon and women, not black women, and women?
So... The thing is, the moon situation is surprisingly very political, you know? It first occurred, I don't even know which one to start off with, but as women, we are connected to the moon because we are the moon. It is in nature that is one of the main embodiments or manifestations of nature that reflect us. And we can tell by the relationship we have with the moon. Often our cycle is linked to the moon. And even if it's not linked directly, like on the full moon you have your periods and on the new moon you have your periods, it is linked in terms of how our body operates. So that clock still mimics the cycle of the full of a moon cycle. So already... on a deep, sacral, guttural, rooted level, we are connected to the moon. And it's almost intuitive. You will find women who are of all walks of life having some sort of understanding that the moon is somehow linked to them. And so back in the day, especially, and the one that was documented was the Western perspective, where women would then meet on these on the full moon and new moon and create ritual practices and honor themselves. And there was nothing more dangerous in the eyes of patriarchy to have women meet alone, similar to apartheid, having black people have meetings that were bad. That is exactly what was happening thousands of years before. And men, or patriarchy, which was represented by men, were highly scared and fear of women coming, because in the moon we're able to link into a power that is beyond what is offered to us. It's beyond the political, it's beyond financial. It's a power that patriarchy and colonization cannot tap into themselves, and that's where the fear comes in. They cannot control it. So those are sort of the history. And so women would meet, and that when then, and just normal women like you and I would meet, but then we would be labeled and branded as witches, as dark witch.
And then we would
be burnt at the stake for this. We would be, sorry, another call just came in. Sorry about that.
No problem.
So then we would be burnt at the stake. And that's where sort of the negative connotations come. And that's why you find a lot of women who are, for example, Jehovah's Witness or in other Christian sort of sects, finding it as evil or finding it as against the religion. And it's because of those beliefs. It's also because it's also linked to pagan rituals, with paganism as you do more. I mean, I'm learning more and more that if I was born in that time, I'll definitely, if I was born in the West, and if I was white, I most likely would have been pagan. But luckily, my African spirituality justifies my practice.
And
modern day, what this is just us coming back to ourselves, coming back to the natural rhythms of our body and of nature, and tapping into a power that has always existed and has always been for us. And when we say women, it's more the divine feminine, which exists in both genders, whether you identify as male or female. So you have many men or queer men or non-binary people in moon ceremonies tapping into that divine feminine nature that is so needed, because it's been so squashed and oppressed in this modern day. So that's what it's about, and people, it can manifest in different ways. You know, some practices, you know, it's about prayer, it's about chanting, it's about rituals. You have people who do, they're also witches, you know, in Western culture. In us, in Africa, we don't have witches, we have healers, or the only witch is a bad witch in African culture. There's no such thing as a good witch. A good witch is a healer. But in Western cultures, they have good witches and bad witches. But, you know, they do spells. They do, it's a great time, very spiritual time. You know, you can clean things, like you can clean energy with the moon's and with the moon's light and radiance. So that's why we clean our crystals at that time. But for what we do at the Nest, we keep it very accessible. Yes. You know, we're very aware and sensitive to the fact that we have quite a diverse community. We have quite a diverse community with people from all over, and we'd never want to offend anybody, but we also want to remain true to ourselves. So our practice is just an awareness of the moon, and then we link it to a practice that we are trained in.
Okay, so you guys don't impose on your many followers, because your gatherings get full. And you know, Instagram lives, it's tough. It's a tough, it's a very competitive space. You know, sometimes you find two people, but yours, 70, 60 people gathering there. So,
we've got on average, it's about 200 people.
Wow,
I've
attended a few, but I never stay long. I'm sorry, but I never stay the cause.
It happens, but I'm glad you at least came through and saw. So as you were saying, we keep it balanced. And also, you know, the spiritual space is one that people need to respect, you know, and we have encountered a lot of people who, you know, because now it's suddenly becoming trendy to be spiritual and you've got the rise of the chakra hand and all of that. People are now working with energies and things that they don't, they're not trained in. They don't have proper knowledge or respect or appreciation for. And so we are obviously stay in our lane, and our lane is trained yoga and meditation instructors. So we link our moon to stuff that we know we can control in terms of, we understand the philosophy, we understand what's coming about.
Yeah,
and that's why our thing is just usually just some breath work, some movement, and some guided meditation. And the meditation will either be yoga nidra or it'll be kundalini meditations. And that's what encompasses our moon ceremonies. And obviously, we link it to whatever astrologically what star sign is there. Yes, and you know, if it's a grounding one, we'll do grounding stuff. It's fire. We'll work with breath of fire, etc. Yes. And that's sort of how our moon ceremonies are sort of orchestrated. But please, you've got to be where the moon is a very potent time. As much as it's good, it can be, it's energy, and it depends on who's yielding it. You know, there are people who can yield it as light bearers and are here to heal and bring awareness, and the people who just use the energy to manipulate and get what they want. So that's why it can have double connotations.
We live in a world of polarity, so those polarities are there with everything. Absolutely. I just want to, so the new moon represents, because I know the new moon and the full moon do different things. If you could touch on that, what does the new, I know, but for my listeners, what does the new moon represent?
Yes, of course, because I was like, moonologist.
Hey, I can't say it's a good way about your baba.
Give other children a chance, né? So the new moon represents new beginnings. It is usually when that you cannot see the moon with your naked eye, as it has just completed its cycle and it's going to start again. And it's a really great time to set intentions, manifestation, and build something that in the next cycle for about 2 weeks, for a fortnight, you get to work towards.
Yeah.
The full moon is the end of that cycle. So it's a time to let go. Leave things, release energy, things that are no longer serving you, that aren't working for you, in order to prepare you for the new moon in which you start again.
Fascinating, because that's what happens to our bodies. Every 14 days a new egg is released, and another 14 days, you know, for those of us who are 28 days, because I've always been 28 days, interestingly. And this is just a side note, I knew instinctively when I was 23, after I had my son, my second child, that I can't actually take contraceptives. No one had told me. The whole against contraceptive movement had not begun. I was bloody 23, and I knew that I'm not going to take these things, and I have not since.
So that is so good. I've never ever taken a contraceptive in my life. It's just intuitively, I just cannot. I'm just like, I'm not messing with that at all. I can't do it.
I also like what you said, and it's a method that you so beautifully busted, and I'm just happy that you said it, which is, people always say my cycle is in line with the moon. It can't be in line with the moon all the time. You can't have a period all the time, because mathematically it doesn't work. I can give you a phase. Like right now, my period is in mid, it's when it's waxing. And I know that it's going to come a time where it meets with the new moon and it meets with the full moon. It's a cycle, people.
Absolutely.
It's not all. Otherwise, it doesn't work. Okay. Thank you for that. I want to ask you some questions that you can pause and think about them. I stole it from Dr. Brené Brown's rapid fire questions, but most podcasters have. But I just ask different questions. So, money. How do you think and feel about money? What does money mean to you? Our listeners can't see you. She just held her head.
Money is probably the area in my life that needs the most form of healing and attention. It's one that I am firmly focused on in this year. I have a lot of trauma surrounding money. A lot of my relationship with money is one of, I hate money, but I obviously need it. But I hate it because of the connotations it's come with. And it's something that I'm slowly in therapy do healing. Whenever money comes to me, I want it to get away as quickly as possible, because I know I'm not used to it bringing anything good. It brings disappointment. It changes people. It has a power dynamic. All of that. It's also this. Yeah, that's my weakest point in my spiritual journey, is definitely finances and understanding the energy around money.
Yeah. Oh, Vanessa, thank you for that honesty. Like you went where I didn't think you'd go. Thank you for sharing that. I also have a money trauma, because I went bankrupt at the height of my life. I was about to turn 31. I had bought a house, I had a business, and I went bankrupt. So it's what people don't understand is the money trauma is right up there, hey, with big traumas and death. Absolutely. And divorces. And it takes a little while. I'm also healing. I'm much, much better, I must say. I'm very gentle with myself. And one of the things I learned in that is that I really, really have to listen to my money guides. I don't care who says what. Like, people can say, your program is cheap, your program is too expensive. I don't care. If it feels in my tummy, because that's where my center is, and in my womb, this price is wrong. Even if the money financial experts or people who are in marketing are saying you are underpricing, I don't buy that anymore, because I get in trouble when I price like that. Like when I price market value, I get in trouble all the time. And I mean, you can't keep learning the same thing over and over. So thank you for that honesty. No. So you are healing that part though.
Yes. And if you have any advice and ways, I mean, I know you did a podcast with CD. So I also, she does work with the energy of money. So I'm going to do something with her. I've got a traditional therapist who's helping me with that. And anything else, I'm really open to. That's definitely my focus, is healing that, because I would be in a way better place if I could just
here. Okay, what I'll talk to you offline. There's something that works for me, and seeing that we've got so many similarities, it will work for you. Time. What does time mean for you? And if you could advise anyone around spending time, what is time to you?
Time, the way we understand it, is an illusion. You know, the idea that the 24 hours in a day, it's broken down in minutes and seconds, is a very Western colonial concept that we have to have matrix kind of sort of situation that allows us to form and be controlled. It's a form of control over us. And once you start seeing time is not, it's not linear. It's not linear at all. Time is space. And it can be bent, it can be reversed, it can be twisted, so long as you understand the laws of physics and beyond, not just what they teach you in the classroom. I'm talking real physics, you know? And so for me, time is something that I'm very, very, very protective over. It is something that I feel in this society, it's weird. It's interesting that time came after money, because the two are equated as one and the same in the society that we live in.
Yes, I get Winston Churchill said time is money, and that guy was such a colonizer.
He was definitely a colonizer. So for me, I see time as space, and depending on where I'm at internally, I'm able to elongate it. I'm able to play around with it. You just have to do a Kundalini meditation, and 3 minutes will feel like two. You can literally stop time while you're meditating. And so that's sort of my time is something that I play around with, and I definitely have a really good relationship with time.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating, because I also have a very good relationship with time. Yeah. Attention, which is very similar to time in a way. And the question really is more about, given this time we live in, the time of social media, the time where we are bombarded with so much things, Vanessa, you know, our attention has become commodity. I mean, if you know anything about social media, you know, all they want is to keep us there. How should be people spending, focusing their attention? What things should we be focusing our attention on?
I love that question. I think for me, fundamentally, I am guided by the theory that energy flows where attention goes. So whatever you're spending your attention on, that's where your energy is going to be consumed. And you need to, if you want to spend your time on social media and being advertised to and being sort of manipulated and influenced in ways that you're not even sure, then that's where your energy is going to be at, and you're going to be in that paradigm. But if you, so it's always better to identify what you want to put your energy in and then put your attention on that and see the transformation. It's literally just a universal law.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's funny you just said universal law. That's the first lesson I teach in my program. I must actually show you my program. I have seven subjects. I start with universal laws because for me that's the base. I mean, if you don't understand where you are at, you won't know what's going on. And then I do the archetypes. After then we do shadow work in March. And then
that sounds like an amazing program.
It's a beautiful
program. Please come offer it at the Nest.
Yeah, please, I will. Let's do that. I'm busy. We are putting it properly online now because this is taking everything I have, but I'll tell you when it's ready. But the program, I've been doing it since 2017. And then in April, I was so fascinated to see that you were offering a chakra lesson one Saturday. And I'm like, oh, this girl, I give chakra lessons for April and May. April, we do the first three, the first lower ones. And then in May, we do the heart upwards. I do the seven. I don't do the many because I know people know that there's other chakras. There's 12.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with all the other chakras. I just know the seven ones.
The seven, and that's the basics that one needs
to understand. Exactly.
Ah, no, that's so interesting. I have loved this. So we're going to exchange numbers.
I know. I was about to tell FNB. I was like, no, come again another day. Leave the card. No, I really enjoyed this. Really,
you know, when you have envisaged a conversation and you knew that it was going to go a particular direction and then you get more than that. Ooh, it's the best.
I look forward to this.
Are going to be a regular. You are going to be a stretch podcast regular. Maybe in terms of collab, we might just
do
a series. We can do a series and put a price on it. And Hila,
I definitely want us to do a collab. That was already clear from the get-go.
Yeah, it is clear. It is clear. Okay, sweetheart. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Lebo. And if you need anything else, give me a shout.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Okay.
Guys, seriously now, like seriously, how amazing is this woman? How amazing is Vanessa? And how amazing is this conversation? Is this my life? Is this my life? This is what you get when you follow the heart and when you do the work. This is it. This is my work, and this is what I look forward to, these type of conversations. This is what I love to do, give you more of this type of work. And going forward, the Stretch Podcast is going to have segments because you know that I'm broad. I have an entrepreneurial side. I'm an author. I'm on the healing and teaching space. So as we go forward on the Stretch Podcast website, we are going to categorize them so that if you are rather enjoying more of the healing work, you know, Bokoko Joy, Bo Panessa, Bo Joe, Bo Tidi, then you can always just get that. And if you are into entrepreneurial space or into, you know, general social topics like body human rights, parenting, as we had last week with Ayanda, then, you know, you can go and just re-listen to that. And instead of just sorting through the numbers, we are going to categorize them for you. But I can tell you now, we are going to have more of this healing because it is in line with my school. It shares the name with the school. And my school is meant to help you grow and learn and heal and stretch. So I really enjoyed this. If I was giddy, if I was too happy, if I was too excited, it's fine. If I was not composed enough for you, these things happen. I wish you love and all green lights, my friends, until next week with another phenomenal guest of the Stretch Podcast.
Thank you, and see you again next week for another episode of the Stretch Podcast.